As was noted, I'm sure glad you're here tonight. I think I looked at the temperature on the car tonight, come the services, and it said 80. I mean, 80 degrees seems to be about, maybe it's not your ideal temp, but I don't know. I would think it would be one of the, if you were voting for ideal temperatures, it would be in the running. But just Labor Day weekends get any prettier than the particular Labor Day weekend we're having. The smoke is kind of all blown out, and the sky is blue, and the temperature seems to be, like, pretty nice to me. And we're alive. Hopefully tonight, you're right with God. In the book of Ephesians chapter 4, and in verse 25, therefore, laying aside falsehood, speak truth each of you with his neighbor. He says, for we're members of one another. In the book, The 12 Rules of Life, An Antidote to Chaos, the writer Jordan Peterson speaks of examining his own life and coming to the stark realization that almost everything I said was untrue. What he means by that is he said he had motives for saying what he said. Sometimes it was to win an argument, or to gain status, or to impress people, or to get what he wanted. I was using language to bend and twist the world in delivering what I thought was necessary. But I was a fake. He kind of looked at his life and say, you know, it just seems like that everything I say is meant to get something for me. I'm trying to make myself look good. I'm trying to win an argument, not necessarily concerned about truth. I'm trying to manipulate people. I'm trying to manipulate life and to give me what I want. You know, I'm a big fake. I'm really not being genuine in what I say. I'm not saying things because I genuinely am concerned about other people and what's the best for other people. I'm just thinking of me. You know, the Bible talks a lot about truth, and it talks about honesty, and it talks about its counterpart, what we would call lying. Book of Proverbs chapter 6 verse 17, among the things that God hates, a lying tongue. And if God says, I hate that, we need to take him seriously. And God is a very compassionate, merciful, forgiving God. There's a number of areas that God said, hey, you know, what you do for a living or whatever, you got a lot of latitude there. When God says he hates something, he really means that from the depth of his being. In the book of 1 Timothy chapter 1, verse 10, we have a list of things: immoral men, homosexuals, kidnappers, liars, perjurers, whatever else is contrary to sound doctrine. Then in Revelation chapter 21 and verse 8, a passage that probably many of us are pretty familiar with as far as a passage on lying, before the cowardly, unbelieving, the abominable, murderers, immoral persons, sorcerers, idolaters, and all liars. Their part will be in the lake of fire and brimstone, which is a second death. And I think the first time I read that, it really struck me that in my mind, lying didn't fit with the others. When I first read that passage, I had always thought that lying was different than murder. That lying's in a different category. That lying is certainly not as serious as murder or being a sorcerer, that sort of thing. And yet God said it is in the same category, is that the liars end up with the murderers and all the other people in that category. And it just struck me that I guess I hadn't taken telling the truth as seriously as I should. Back then, there was an honesty problem back then. One passage would be book of Titus chapter 1 verse 12, where Titus says that one of their own prophets says about them this: Cretans are always liars. This testimony is true, he says. For this reason, reprove them severely so that they may be sound in the faith. I remember reading a book about a man who was riding his bicycle, and he stopped. He was going, I think, from France to Italy. Stops in Switzerland to buy a bike lock, a lock for his bike. And a lady says, you don't need a lock for your bike in Switzerland. He says, I'm going to Italy. She says, there is no lock you can buy that will protect your bike in Italy. Two different countries, but One country has a reputation for honesty or will respect your stuff. Another reputation is, you know, your stuff doesn't even cool off and it's gone if it's not locked up severely. And even then, it might be gone with the lock with it. The Cretans were that way. Paul says, you know, there's a major honesty problem on the island of Crete. And he didn't say, you know, that's kind of an exaggeration. He says, you know, really, that's true. A number of the people there lie all the time. And so remember, that's your base that you're converting people from that background. And so they're going to have a temptation on that. So you need to do a number of sermons on honesty and telling the truth. That you can't just bring your culture with you when you become a Christian. In the book of Jeremiah chapter 12 verse 6, Jeremiah was encouraged, admonished by God. He said, even your brothers and the household of your father, even they have dealt treacherously with you. Do not believe them, although they say nice things to you. Is that even if your extended family is saying really nice things about you, they're backstabbers. They're lying. They're not telling you the truth. They're actually trying to work you harm. The prophets prophesy falsely. The priests rule on their own authority. Maybe it's kind of they make up rules as they go for religion. And my people love it so. Seems like the general population enjoyed that. They enjoyed the man-made religion they had. And they enjoyed the prophets lying to them. Great question at the end of that verse, but what will you do at the end of it? Which might be, and how will this end? Or, this will not end well. If this is what's going on, then where is this going to lead in the culture? It's not going to be a good end. 75% of college students cheat. And that's not merely at like a community college or like a small little college. Harvard has a problem with students cheating. All major colleges do. Zach was talking about tests he took, that there was not just a professor in the room. There was a number of teacher's aides in the room. You were virtually searched as you came into the room. If they caught you looking at anybody's stuff, you were immediately kicked out of the room on the test. And if you went to use the bathroom, you were done. You could not come back in. Just because cheating has become so rampant. I think, John, you were talking about that was a challenge you had with your students of just a lot of cheating. Some feel that the college, I owe no allegiance to this college, it really doesn't care about me in the end, it's taking my money, I'm really overpaying for what I'm getting, etc. So some people, it's an authority problem, it's a respect problem with the institution. Others justify it by saying, hey, I can always look up that information on Google later, I don't see really why that's an important part of the test or the quiz, I can just look that up later. If I need to know that, I can look it up on my phone later. Others, it's pure self-interest. I feel I'm being overworked. They're giving me too much information that I have to learn in a short period of time. And in order to simply survive and pass these classes and get out of here with a degree where I can make money and pay off my loans, I got to cheat. And some kind of seek to justify it that way. I just need to pass. I just need to pass these tests right now. Without really any long-term thinking of, okay, but when I'm in a situation where I need that information, like if I'm a nurse or a doctor, I just cannot say, wait, I need to look this up on Google, like how, you know, or etc. There are times you just can't look it up on Google. You need to know it right now. Bending the truth is easy. I'm not lazy. It just takes me a while to get going. I'm not lazy. I have slow blood. You know, I have thick blood or whatever. I'm not unmotivated, rather I'm just a very laid-back and relaxed person. I mean, we can spin things always in our favor. I don't have a problem with anger, I just have a forceful personality. I'm not addicted, I can stop this whenever I want. I'm not gossiping, I'm just sharing my concern. I'm not flirting, I'm just a friendly person by nature. I didn't lie, I just stretched the truth a little. It's easy to spin things where we end up looking really good. There's one ad on the radio. It's a defense firm that specializes in DWIs. And I think it's the Reynolds defense firm. And it's, you know, they talk about that this happens to good people. Oh, yeah, good people go out and drink while they're driving. And there was an interesting thing there. It talked about if there's someone that gets a drunk driving ticket and someone you believe in. Now it's like, well, what if it's someone you don't believe in? I don't know. Just kind of, it's a weird way. It's kind of spun that if you had that ticket, obviously you're not a bad person. And obviously it's not your fault. It's just kind of the way it's spun that kind of bothers me on that. I think the root a lot of times of dishonesty is itself. At the heart of why we're tempted to lie, I think it's always the same basic issue. It's self-interest. We're concerned about staying out of perceived trouble. I'm going to lie because if I tell the truth, that's going to get me in trouble. Or making ourselves look good. Or avoiding uncomfortable situations or conversations. Or getting ahead. And there's just so many ways to lie. You can mislead. You can exaggerate. You can downplay. You can omit. You can flatter. You can remain silent. James chapter 4, verse 17 says, the person who knows the right thing to do and does not do it to him who has sinned, we can lie by saying nothing. Where we're leaving a false impression. Or we don't speak up when we need to speak up. And I mean, there's just all these different ways that we cannot tell the truth. One writer said you can use words to manipulate the world in delivering what you want. This is spin. The writer talked about that he had a client that was on like a land use board for construction who knew nothing about construction. That is that this woman had basically finagled herself into getting a spot on a board on construction and safety, had no degree and knew nothing about anything of what she was dealing with. But she had just finagled her way there. She just kind of told people what they wanted to hear and sweet-talked and etc. and made friends and had a couple of jobs even though she knew nothing about what she was doing. Spin. It's the specialty of marketers, salesmen, advertisers, pickup artists, slogan-possessed utopians, psychopaths, sociopaths. It's the speech people engage in when they attempt to influence and manipulate others. An example to me would be Aaron's lie about the golden calf, the creation of the golden calf. And I would say that this would be, I'm not sure if it's the original spin, but I tell you what, it's clever spin. When Moses asks Aaron, well, what did they do to you? How did this happen? Aaron will say in verse 24 of Exodus 32, I said to them, whoever has any gold, let him tear it off. So they gave it to me, and I threw it into the fire, and out came this calf. That's spin. That's trying to make yourself look good. When the reality is that you cowered to peer pressure. And you did not stand up for God. Another example, I think, is Cain, early on in the book of Genesis, where God said, where's Abel, your brother? And he said, am I my brother's keeper? I got enough to do without keeping track of him. That's spin. And I think a lot of times we do that. Well, what are you asking me that for? I have so many responsibilities, don't even realize how busy my life is, and everything's on my shoulders. We pull a Cain. Well, am I supposed to keep track of that too? We make ourselves look like the victim. Poor Cain, overworked, too much responsibility. Got to keep track of everything, including his brother. Poor, overworked Cain. The reality is that he knew exactly where his brother was, and he's a murderer. When the chief priests and elders, when Jesus asked the chief priests and elders John's baptism, what's the source of John's baptism? Heaven or men? Was John the Baptist a prophet sent by God, or was he just making up what he said? And when they said to Jesus, "We do not know," that's not true. That was a lie. And the reason I say that is because they had formed a definite opinion about John. Luke chapter 7 will say that many of the religious leaders had not been baptized under John's baptism, is that they had rejected it. It's not that they did not know. It's not that this is too difficult to figure out. We would be baptized by him if we could figure out if it was from God or not. But we just don't know. They had already formed a definite conclusion about John. Knowing that, but if they really believed John, they'd believe Jesus. And Jesus pointed that out to them. It's because John is the one who said, "Behold the Lamb of God that takes away the sin of the world." And he was pointing to Jesus in John chapter 1. And so "we do not know" is not the truth. But, well, I think we know what the motivation is. They don't want to give Jesus any ground. They don't want to admit, they don't want to ever say to Jesus, "You know what, on that point, you're right about that." They don't want to give Jesus any ground, and they don't want to get in trouble with the crowds. Not God, but it's the crowds. It's the multitudes. One other said, "Why not lie?" And we all know why people lie. We know why we've lied. Why not twist and distort things to obtain a small gain? Or to smooth things over? You know, why not embellish that resume to get a better job? Why not kind of twist things a little bit to make yourself look better? To gain a little bit of popularity? To make yourself look a little bit better on Facebook or whatever, to make yourself look a little bit better on some dating site or whatever it may be. Why not kind of, you know, bend the truth a little bit there, to keep the peace, to avoid hurt feelings? Because reality has a terrible aspect to it. He says, "Do we really need to confront its snake-headed face in every moment of our waking consciousness and at every turn in our lives? Why not turn away at least when looking is simply too painful?" But the same writer is going to say, like, "But you're not solving any problems there. You're not making life easier for yourself at all." Because lies tend to turn into monsters that come back and devour you. And we're not helping anybody, including ourselves, when we distort, manipulate, twist, bend, spin, etc. So, what are good reasons to tell the truth? Number one, things fall apart. And a lie is always a temporary solution. It's just a temporary fix. You know, I know people that, as I said, I ran into an estate sale a while back. Here are the kids taking care of things, cleaning it out. Mom and Dad never wanted to make a will. Mom and Dad did not want to talk about that. Mom and Dad did not want to talk about death. They didn't want to talk about end-of-life issues. That's a lie. Because you're going to die. And you make it really difficult on your kids if you don't have a will. Tell you what, having a hand-copied will that I dealt with from Cindy's mom that was notarized was hard enough. Because I had to track down the witnesses. And luckily I made a good guess on who they were. I mean, not having a will? Wow. That's not easy. As far as when you settle things. But that's a lie because you're going to die. Lies do not stand the test of time. They just don't. They're typically exposed at some point and seen for what they are. No, and they end up exposed, and often they end up exposed in this life. And if not, they end up exposed in the life to come. In 2 Corinthians 5:10, for we must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ. And the word there, appear, is the idea that we will appear as we really are. So that each one may be recompensed for his deeds in the body according to what he has done. And that verse has always reminded me that I can't ever pin anything on anybody else. If I'm challenged by something, I can't say, well, that's my mom's fault, my dad's fault, that's their fault, etc. When I stand before Jesus, Jesus is going to say, okay, as we're talking, I don't want to hear about anybody else. I'll deal with them. Right now, it's you and me. And let's talk about what you did. And you're not allowed to bring anyone else into the conversation. And I think the sooner I realize that, the better I'll be able to grow or whatever, that I cannot pin anything else on anybody else for why I either didn't become a Christian or remained faithful to God. And I'm gonna appear, and I'm going to appear as I am. The mask is going to be off. It's just going to be truth, me and truth. Me, Jesus, and the truth. And that's, Judgment Day is truly the no-spin zone. And that's some motivation for me to take care of things now. If I'm a Christian right now, and I know that my excuse right now for not being a Christian is not going to hold up for the day of judgment, then what in the world am I holding on to it for? Or if I know right now I'm not the Christian that I should be, and that's not going to stand up before Jesus, and whatever excuse I try to make for that is not going to fly, then why even hold on to that? Why even waste any time trying to prop that up? Why not just fix the issue? Nothing's going to remain the same in our lives. We're going to need something far more substantial than a lie to handle real life. And I think only the truth enables you to handle real life. In the book of James, chapter 1, and verse 2, consider it all joy, my brethren, when you encounter various trials. Or verse 12, blessed is a man who perseveres under trial. Life has its very hard aspect to it. I think only the truth is going to enable me to deal with the hard aspects of life. Ephesians chapter 6, verse 10. Our struggle is not against flesh and blood. It is against world forces of wickedness in heavenly places. Therefore, you're going to need the gospel. You're going to need righteousness. You're going to need truth. You're going to need faith. You're going to need the helmet of salvation. And you are going to need the sword of the Spirit, which is the Word of God. A lie, you go against the world forces of wickedness with a lie, and it's going to crumble. And I think I would crumble with it. If I try to go against Satan with a lie, it's going to crumble, and I'm going to crumble. There are simply times in life you're going to need a really big gun. And that's it. And you're going to need some real serious armor. There are just certain things that I'm going to need something more substantial than that. Reality eventually shows up. Psalm 73, the psalmist talked about people that their life was going good, they didn't have God in their life, they weren't serving God, but he realized that reality was going to show up one day in their life. How they are destroyed in a moment, they are utterly swept away by sudden terrors, as or like a dream when one awakes. Reality is going to show up. Real stark reality. Luke chapter 16, verse 23, the rich man died and he opened up his eyes, he lifted up his eyes, he was in torment. That day reality showed up. Faring sumptuously in purple every day was not reality. I die, I look up, I'm in torment, Reality just showed up. The storm hits. Matthew chapter 7:25. That's why my life needs to be built on a rock. And the rock is not what I want to believe. The rock is not the reality I construct. The rock is not some fantasy world that I've kind of constructed around me. The rock is truth. Am I who I think I am? The rock is truth. And only truth remains standing. One of them said, truth builds edifices that can stand 1,000 years. That's what truth builds. And I would say longer than that as well. Truth feeds and clothes the poor, makes nations wealthy and safe. Truth reduces the terrible complexity of a man to the simple simplicity of his word. That your yes is yes and your no is no. So that he can become a partner rather than an enemy. A number of young people must look at marriage in our culture right now and go like, this is scary. Look at the amount of marriages that fail. How do I know this person? You know what can take all of that complex, really complex stuff, and it is complex. But you know what can simplify it? Does that person love God more than you? Are they honest? That can simplify everything down real quick. What seems so complex is, do they love God more than me? Are they honest? Do they love truth? On the basis of truth, we can form a partnership that lasts a lifetime. We can accomplish amazing things. We can trust one another, work together, etc. But boy, if we don't trust one another, if I'm not sure if they're still going to be here tomorrow, then there's nothing really I can work with or build upon or things like that. Truth makes the past truly past, makes the best use of the future's possibilities. Truth is the ultimate and inexhaustible natural resource. It's the light in the darkness. An example of that. I think when I talk about that, lies can't stand the test of time. Ultrasound. Ultrasound has forever put to rest the idea that a baby is just in the womb, is just a mass. Ultrasound just kind of blew that lie out of the water. No, that's a human being there. Now, if you still want to argue that you can do what you want to do, okay, but you cannot ever now say that's just a blob of tissue there. Ultrasound exposed that lie. And I think also time has told us that back in the 70s where everyone said, let's kind of have this easy divorce, that'll be better for the people involved, that'll be better for the kids, the mom and dad that don't enjoy one another can just get on with life, go and be happy. I think time has told us that divorce, no fault divorce, has not been easy upon anybody. It wasn't easy on the couple, it's not easy on single parents that are living at a poverty line, mothers trying to raise or fathers trying to raise kids up by themselves. It is not easy on the kids. Just ask Kurt Cobain if you could have a conversation with him right now. And it was not easy on society either. It hasn't been easy on anybody. And that's what I mean. I think time exposes things, and lies can only last so long. And then they get exposed. I see this sign around a lot. One of the things about the sign is that a number of people that have this sign in their yard, I don't know if they even believe what's on the sign. Love wins. I agree with that. But what about God's love? Is God's love winning? That's the highest form of love. God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whoever believes him should not perish but have eternal life. Is that love winning? Do you care about the ultimate expression of love? Love rejoices in the truth. Love is self-sacrificial. Do you really believe that love wins? Are you practicing love? Immigrants and refugees are welcome. Yes, absolutely. But you realize something, that's not the issue. America has been very open to immigrants and refugees over the years. The issue is people that come here illegally. I mean, let's just be honest about the issue. The issue is not about immigration. And I guess I'm kind of frustrated that a lot of other countries that have very stringent immigration policies. I remember Curtis Pope was thinking about going to Norway to preach. To go to Norway to preach, he would need a doctorate, a PhD to get in to preach. That's pretty stringent. But no one complains about Norway's immigration policies. And I guess I'm just frustrated that America, that has been so open to immigration over the years, that we're the one that gets slammed for being supposedly unloving in that area, where it looks like that of all countries, we have tried to be very open to that. Women are in charge of their bodies. I would agree with that. But once you get pregnant, could we also tell the truth that once you're pregnant, that's not just your body any longer, that there's another body there? Could we be honest about that? At least on that issue? Diversity is celebrated. Great. But what about someone who believes that Jesus is the only way to the Father? Because that's what the Bible says. Will you celebrate that? Will you honor that? What if someone believes that the book of Genesis is true and that God created the universe in 6 days? Is that diversity celebrated as well? I mean, I agree with the statement, but you're put in the yard. Do you really honor all diversities or all diverse viewpoints? Is the person who's a Christian celebrated that really believes what God says? All people are equal. I agree with that. But do you practice it? Is the unborn child in the womb equal with the rest of us? Are they equal? So I guess that's why I say, I don't know, just a number of the statements there don't tell all the truth. Let's just tell all the truth. Black Lives Matter, absolutely, absolutely. But if you support abortion, you don't believe Black Lives Matter because a disproportionate number of children who are aborted are black. So can we tell all the truth? Yeah, police need to be trained properly, be careful, be circumspect. But can we be honest with black men and say, a number of men before you have not set the best example for you in your culture? If you're in the wrong part of town at the wrong part of night, and if you're pulled over, and if you're putting your hand in your pocket, you're shifting around, you need to understand that that police officer is probably just as nervous as you are, and he might have a wife and a child that he wants to go home to tonight. Can we just tell all the truth on things like that? Of things that we all need to hear equally. Relationship and truth. Only truth can create a relationship between us and God. I think of 1 John chapter 1 and verse 6. If we say that we have fellowship with Him and yet walk in the darkness, we lie and do not practice the truth. You cannot have a relationship with God without truth. That is that Jesus is the Christ. I need to believe in Him. But just believing Him is not enough. I do need to repent of my sins, Acts 2:38. I do need to confess that Jesus is the Christ, Romans 10:9 and 10. And I also need to be baptized, immersed in water for the forgiveness of my sins, because Jesus said, "He that believeth and is baptized shall be saved." I mean, that's part of the truth. 2 Corinthians chapter 4 and verse 2 is another passage along those lines. I like what Paul said in that particular letter. But we have renounced the things hidden because of shame, not walking in craftiness or adulterating the word of God, but by the manifestation of truth, commending ourselves to every man's conscience in the sight of God. And I think what that includes is that if we're going to be a church that wears the name Church of Christ, we need to continue to strive to be the Lord's church. I know we cannot force, you can't force people to follow God, but here's what I wish people would do. If people are not following the Bible, I wish they would simply say, hey, if you're looking for a church where they follow the Bible, go somewhere else. Because we're not doing that. At least just be upfront about that. If we're really not going to follow the Bible, then just at least say, hey, if you're really looking for a Bible plan of salvation, if you're really looking for the worship and be like the church in the first century, you're not going to find it here. And if we ever get to the point that that's not what we're doing, then we just need to put a sign in the door that says, if you're looking for the Lord's church, we're not it. That is truth. Just simple honesty. Without truth, real relationships cannot exist. Without truth, there could be no trust, no foundation upon which to build. Our absence of truth also guarantees that our friendships will be superficial, undependable in times of real need. Truth and growth. One of the real dangers of avoiding the truth is that we end up believing our own exaggerations and fabrications. 2 Timothy talked about people that were deceiving and being deceived. And I think part of that is you end up believing your own lies about yourself. Truth in the darkness. If you say no to your boss or your spouse or whoever it may be, when you need to say no, then you'll transform yourself into someone that can say no when it needs to be said. If you say yes when no needs to be said, however, you transform yourself into someone who can only say yes, even when it is perfectly clear that it's time to say no. Someone said, if you're asking yourself, if you ever go to like a Holocaust memorial or museum, how could this happen? There was no one there that said no. The people just simply didn't say no. They had said yes so long, the one compromise after another. They had said yes so long when they should have said no, that when you started putting people in gas chambers, there was no one left who could say no. Be somebody who can say no when no needs to be said. Just don't be someone who just goes along to get along. Be someone who can say no when no needs to be said. Because only truth can push back the darkness. John chapter 3, Ephesians 6. Truth, the sword of the Spirit. Small lies never remain small. If you look close enough, the biggest lie is composed of smaller lies. Things like communism is composed of a lot of small lies. Nazi Germany was based on a lot of smaller lies that ended up being one big lie. In John chapter 8, verse 32, Jesus says, if you continue in my word, then truly you'll be disciples of mine, and you'll know the truth, and the truth will set you free. He also said, I did not come to bring peace on the earth. That is peace in the sense of, let's just all put our heads in the sand. Let's just all kind of agree to disagree sort of peace. I did not come to bring peace, but a sword. Most people that you'll run into resent the sword that Jesus brought. Because it demands that you take a side. That you take a stand. And often that you take a stand by yourself or just with a few people around you. Don't ever resent the sword that Jesus brought into the world. Appreciate that sword. Because what that sword can liberate you from is it can liberate you from the lies of a culture. It can liberate you. Maybe you came from a family that there were a lot of lies in the family you came from. A whole lot of lies. Stuff was shifted under the rug. Stuff wasn't talked about. Stuff wasn't discussed that needed to be discussed. people were enabled, and so he came from an environment where the truth was not spoken. Jesus' sword can take you. You want to be free from that? You want to be free from that past? Here, there you go. You're free. You're free. You do not have to keep on the lies for the next generation. You're free. The same thing with the culture. Or it could be all sorts of generational stuff behind you, and just like that sword goes, Mark, you are free. You're free to serve God. You are free to speak the truth. I think it makes things simple. I can build my life upon that. I can trust you. You can trust me. We can build a life together. We can build a congregation together. I'm free to get rid of what doesn't work in my life. I'm free to get rid of that. I don't have to hide. I don't have to cover for you, and you don't have to cover for me. And I don't have to go along if it's wrong and I'm uncomfortable with it. Man, you'll know the truth, and the truth will make you free. I guess just a little bit of a heads up. If you opt out on the truth, don't be surprised as you come to the end of your life, you will say to yourself, you know, I thought I was doing my own thing, but I think actually what I spent my whole life doing was being a slave to what other people thought and their opinions and their likes and their dislikes. And I don't know if I ever really did what I really wanted to do. I was covering for people. I was doing things I didn't really want to do because it wasn't right, but I did it because I didn't want to make waves. And I think he ended up bitter. I was used. People just used me. The truth sets you free. I think the truth sets you free where you come to your life and says, I felt good about the life I lived. I lived it in the life. I did the right thing. Yeah, I made some enemies. I made some unpopular decisions. There were times that non-Christian family members were not happy with what I did. But I can stand before God with a clear conscience. And I feel good about the life I put together. And that liberated me. And I wasn't a slave of any man. I was a slave of Christ. But I was not a slave of any man. No matter who they were. And I went through life with the freedom of following and speaking and doing the truth. And it was not a life based on lies and sand. It was a life based on the way things really are. He that believeth and is baptized shall be saved. Lest be standing and singing the imitation song.